Good morning, historians from around the internet. Welcome back to the Old History Podcast, part of the Old History Social Media Project, where I aim to make the silent history of the Appalachian region more known and available to the public. So for those of you that are still kind of new to the channel, excuse me, the podcast. Just going to give you a brief overview of just what we do here. Project's called Old Histories, you just heard. I go around all kinds of places, just trying to uncover the story of what it was, why it was, and how it was. Some people might be asking a question somewhere on the internet, looking it up, can't find anything. Well, it's going to be here. It might be here on the Old History social media, one of the social media pages. Maybe, not always, and I normally try to stay right here around the southern United States, the Appalachian region, but I do venture outside of this area, like war and stuff like that. Okay, so today, Saturday, a little later today, I'm going to be headed out to meet with the elderly couple from Russellville. Had to postpone it last weekend, just some unforeseen circumstances, so we rescheduled for today. So if you haven't already, go ahead and venture over to my Patreon if you want to support the project. And if you don't want to do Patreon, you can support it here. As little as 99 cents a month. It just if you like what you hear. Also, go and visit my good friend Jason over at the Beard Guy and Friends. For all you bearded men out there, you might want to stop using Walmart brand and support the little guy. Mr. Ripley makes amazingly scented beard oils and he's a real down-to-earth guy. Okay, so today's podcast, visited this subject thousands of times. Well, not that many. Quite a bit here on my project. It's going to be one more time visited today. We're going to go over a little bit more about the Pressman's home, or at least what we can in a podcast. Let's dive right in. All right, so for those of you that are not from Tennessee, you might have seen pictures of a great big old gargantuan brick building with a little white building right beside of it. And on the other side of the road from it is, you might see some pictures of stairs that seem to go to nowhere. I know this is best described in a video, but, you know, some people don't like to watch YouTube, some people don't like Facebook. So we'll just make do with what we've got. So the Pressman's home is in Hawkins County, Tennessee, about 15 to 20 minutes outside of town on just off of 70 or just off of 66, aka the town knob. So what exactly is it? But in order to answer that question, we've got to look at the history of it. So long before the Pressman's home was even a thought, was known as Happy Valley, and existed a plantation there built by Colonel James Richardson. It was known as the Hail Springs Resort. Colonel Richards came to Hawkins County around 1825 and bought 800 acres of land and built himself a plantation, complete with somewhere in the neighborhood of right at around 30 log cabins. And they'd be used as quarters for the Richards family slaves. This property was pretty special, too, because it contained special red and white mineral springs, which at the time was thought to have medicinal qualities. And if this was thought to be the case all the way up until right at around the mid-1900s. So your mamaw probably still talks about going and drinking sulfur water or mineral water. So eventually, when the colonel passed on, his daughter turned the plantation into a resort hotel. It would furnish the hotel with all the finest silverware, fine china, and furniture. And then further, the hotel got to be so popular that a special stage route was put in to transfer guests from the Hail Springs Resort back to Rogersville. Now, this is not the same thing as the Hail Springs Hotel in downtown. This is the Hail Springs Mineral Resort, It was. I can't think of the name of the road, but it's on Pressman's Home. It would have been in the neighborhood of where Pressman's Home Road is today. So, coming to the 1900s here, around 1910, Major George L. Berry, or actually before he was Major, he was just George L. Berry, he would become president of this new union called the International Printing Pressmen and Assistants Union of North America. And there's more history that goes on about the IPPAU. But Mr. Berry purchased the land that would soon become Pressman's home, only with mere dreams of what it would become just a few short years later. But now let's just back up. Who in the world was George Berry? And what was the IPPAU? Well, George Leonard Berry was a Hawkins County native. He became president of the IPPAU in 1907. Upon being elected for the so-called Printing Pressmen's Union, he immediately began searching for the ideal spot to set up the headquarters for the union. Such places like Kentucky, Washington State, Virginia, New York, they were all tossed around, but they just really didn't seem to suit his fancy. So one place stuck out. It was a place over in small, quiet county of Hawkins, over in Tennessee. Not too far from where he was born. He noted the quiet serenity of the mountains, a place already known for its pastoral beauty. He purchased the old Civil War colonel's home and land, which included several slave taverns on the property. And by the time the Union began to move in around 1911, the first buildings would already be completed. It would be the home building, which by the time they bought the land would have already been built. And the administration building would soon follow in 1912, but more on these later. By the time the First World War rolled around, Major Berry would go overseas and rise to the rank of major, leading the American Expeditionary Forces. Upon his return, he resumed his position as the president of this union. Not going to say the full, that's a mouthful to say that every time. The IPPAU would grow to be the largest printing trade in the world and go on to eclipse more than 130,000 members. Now, this union was created in 1889 by unhappy international typographical union members who wanted better representation in what they did. It is said by many people that the only thing they actually brought in was salt and coal. Kidding. But in its short 65-year existence, just a few miles outside of the rural town of Rogersville, Pressman's home became known both nationally and internationally, drawing the attention of world leaders and people from all walks of life. People from other countries would come just to visit the Pressman's home. And since then, since it's shut down, it's become the stuff of legend and its abandonment. Now, 50 some odd years later, its legacy still lives on, both with the stories of its glorious past from the people who still remember it in its glory days, and the pictures and videos of ghost hunters and urban rural explorers trying to capture the essence of a literal abandoned town and the stories of the elderly. Historians trying to keep the history alive. Some say they just go up there to visit just to see the mean old man come out with a shotgun. But in reality, I know the owner. He's a really nice man who just wants to protect his property. Very nice. Very down to earth. Just wants nothing but the best for the Pressman's home, but can't because people are rude, mean, and cruel. Okay. So, back to the buildings on the Pressman's home. Now, I'm not going to go over every single building here, but the home building. It does not exist anymore. If you're on my Instagram, or my Facebook page, you'll see the pictures I posted of it. Was originally known as the Hail Springs Hotel. It was built in 1911 and was one of the first buildings built, if not the first, for the Union. It had 300 rooms and was for lodging visitors, visiting dignitaries, international officers of the Union, and it was further used as an American Legion complex until the Persona Tavern was built. But it earned its name later on. It became the apartments The building's apartments became home to full-time residents and were well-appointed, featuring kitchens, dining rooms, even a shared pool room. Now, this building, of course, like the others, fell into major disrepair after the Union left and was lost to an arson fire. You can still go up and see the ruins where it just fell in. And the pictures of this place make it look absolutely magnificent. So the admin building was originally the trade school when it was completed in 1912, and it was completely a state-of-the-art facility. It housed both letter press and offset press technique training, as well as pre-press and bindery. I don't know what those are. The school was attended by tradesmen from all over the country, and even some foreign students were reported to attend it. Eventually became the largest of its kind in the world. And later on, after the new trade school was built, it would serve as the administration building, and also which housed the offices of the union executives, housed the accounting department, the service bureau, membership records, so on and so forth. Now, this building does still stand, but it is in rough shape. People go in and threw rocks at the building, knock the doors in. Okay, so we'll consider this a halfway point in the story. This is a big one. The story of the tuberculosis sanatorium is an interesting one. Was dedicated in June of 1911 at the Union's 23rd annual convention. Remained incomplete until 1916. It was a hospital set aside and paid for by the Union, especially for the care of members who contracted tuberculosis through work in the printing business. As back in those days, the disease was very common, and it could be deadly if not treated. Members and union executives considered the mountainous location to be ideal for the placement of such a care facility, as fresh air was considered one of the best treatments for tuberculosis. Another huge plus in the location was the convenient placement of the numerous natural mineral springs around the property, which was considered and believed by many to cure many ailments. In reference to the sanatorium, Mr. Barry once said in his essay, "The Brotherhood of Man." That was the name of his essay, sorry. "In this institution, a monument to the science of sanatorium construction will be evidenced, for indeed it represents one of the most incomplete and practical plans for the care of the tubercular that has yet to be erected in this country." Continued to say that the architectural and medical efforts exerted in this institution have been gathered from the personal inspection and experiences of over 50 tubercular sanatoriums. According to Jay Isaacs, a British Union delegate, over 14 different plans were considered before a final decision was made. The final product would be a massive, huge four-story white building with an elevator designed by Paul Pickering, owner of the Biltmore Sanatorium at Asheville, North Carolina, architect R.S. Smith, and President Barry. Three very, very smart men. The final product would be a building in the shape of a cross, which was thought to promote sunlight and fresh air. The TB Sanatorium, we'll stop here just for a small break, coffee break. The TB Sanatorium was staffed 24/7 and always had the best medical care and most up-to-date medical equipment. It continued to be a top-notch facility until advancements in medicine in the 1940s and 50s proved that there was no real correlation between printing ink and TB. After that, the wheels of the sanatorium came to a pretty abrupt stop as operations were slowed down. Sort of became a financial drain on the union, and it would be demolished in the late 50s to the early 60s, I cannot put a date, so that the union could make better use of the land. And today, the road that it sat on is just grown up. Nothing's out there. And we'll stop here after this one. This is the Memorial Chapel, and this is my favorite place, and I don't know why. But when I was up there taking pictures, got to go in. Well, you can't go in it, and I got to go around it, look at it, admire it. So the Memorial Chapel was built in 1924 for the members of the IPPAU that perished in the war to end all wars, World War I. The building was an Italianate-style chapel designed by world-renowned architect John Sheridan. The inside of the sandstone church had a fresco painting of Jesus Christ and his angels, hand-painted by G. Harmon Simmons, with stained glass windows designed by Lewis Comfort Tiffany. Had a seating capacity of over 500 people. When the chapel was dedicated, the legendary Sergeant Alvin C. York attended the ceremony. Chapel. Now, I've heard differing stories. Either the bells were on top of the trade school, or they were in the church. It was carry-on bells that rang five times a day. It would be a non-denominational church where anyone of any denomination could attend without worry. In the garden outside the chapel, a special crypt would be built in 1998 to house the body of George Berry and his wife. Although their bodies would later be moved to the town cemetery, this crypt still exists. It is very creepy to just walk up on it with nothing in there. A special ceremony was also held in 1948 that dedicated the chapel to include all members of the Union that died in World War II, and later for all members of the military. At the time, it was thought to be the only Union-owned place of worship in the United States. Now today, the once gorgeous church sits in ruin with Mother Nature moving in to claim her prize. The floors are falling through, ceiling is caving in, the walls are slowly returning to the very ground they came from. As if I did not mention, that church is made from sandstone, mined right out of the ground, at the very mine that the Pressman's home owned. Stained glass windows are also vanishing pane by pane. And the beautiful fresco painting, well, it's all but faded. And we'll stop there. I'll make a second podcast and discuss the other buildings. Some other things about the Pressman's home. If you haven't got the chance to just drive out there, just on the next sunny day, just take a drive down 66 cut off of Pressman's Home Road. Or if you're coming from another way, go up Highway 70. And do not turn to go up Kyle's Ford. Instead, go straight, but right by the old dilapidated gas station. You will not regret spending a little extra time going to visit it. One day it might not be there. But please don't trespass. The owner is very adamant that nobody goes out there. He's not a scary man, but he can be. And I honestly don't blame him. Because out there, you're so far away from anything. There's no telling how long it would be before law enforcement could get there. So he comes out protected, and quite honestly, I don't blame him. I would too. So I hope everybody enjoyed this podcast. And also stay tuned on the YouTube channel for the video, unless it gets postponed again. Have a good weekend.